Okay. So yesterday we laid out the three factors that that work together to exempt Talmidei Chachamim from taxes. The first was that which opened the sugya, which was the claim that they don't need security. Rabbanan lo tzrichei netiruta. And we noted that in that part of the sugya, it sounds like what obligates you in taxes is simply, right, you're paying for services. So if you don't need it, you don't pay for it. And yet, when the Gemara actually invokes various psukim as proofs to that argument, none of them seem to actually head in that direction. Some of them focus more on kavod issues, and that's especially accentuated at the end of the Gemara, when the Gemara says, or at least as the potentially then the Gemara, when it talks about the case of the cisterns, that it's not the way of Talmidei Chachamim to be working manually that way. And the Ezra Psukim either can be read as kavod, meaning it's not honorable for them to be paying these taxes, or it's a trade, right? That no, the reason that they're exempt is because they're already contributing to society in a different way, right? That's where we were. And we noted the Rambam seems to accept all three of those implications. Exempt them from security tax because of the lack of need, and that appears in Hilchot Shechinim, which is talking about obligations of the community, but is much more expansive in terms of what he exempts them from in Hilchot Talmud Torah, and he brings it there in the context of the things you have to do to honor Talmidei Chachamim, which is beyond the taxes issue. And the in Hilchot Shemitah v'Yovel, the Rambam starts with his discussion of Levim and Kohanim, who are exempt from going to war and certain things because of this trade relationship. And then he ends with this halachic hashkafic statement that Talmidei Chachamim are the same way, which does seem to be that the Rambam is reading all three of these as being true, which leads us to a potentially more expansive category. And what we'd left off with yesterday was one way of looking at these three is that they're three independently functioning rationales. But the other is to say, no, that they're primary rationales, but it's specifically the existence of these three that creates the category of Talmud Chacham. So to test this, right, to test the exact way, we have to look through different potential implications that will help us really flesh out the ideas here. So I want to turn to, did you read the Ramban? It's really the first one I wanted to go to, but. Okay, so let's read the Ramban. I definitely sent you the link. I have a hard copy here, which is easier for me. What? Did yesterday. Okay, fine. So let's try reading through the Ramban. So the Ramban writes as follows. So first he just quotes Rashi in terms of defining the different types of taxes. Okay? Teirish Rashi, Zechon al-Racha, Migviat Misim, from the collection of tax. Arnona is Yisure Tzvot Behemot Shana B'Shana. Arnona is a 10% tax on animals and produce. V'cheni kar Behemot V'Yisah Shal Igbiyum Imenu Yisure Shal Melech Nekret Behemot Arnona. V'Yisah Arnona V'Logit Yisure Shem Shal Amru Shetafot. He goes through all different taxes. But this is the claim I want to focus on. He says, V'nir'eh She'ein Talmidei Chachamim P'turin Yisure Tzvotam V'lo mikesef gulgal tam, ela kishahamelech metil al bnei ha'ir liten kach v'kach b'pidyon gulgal tam v'kach v'kach b'maaser tzvotam v'hem yisaku b'neihem. The Ramban argues that the exemption of taxes is only in a case where the tax is framed as a communal obligation that the community owes $1 million, and then you figure out how to divide it up. L'fi sheyecholin talmidei chachamim lomar lo hitil ha-melech aleinu klum ela bishvilchem. Because then the talmidei chachamim can say that the king only put this obligation on us because of you. Aval im amar ha-melech liten kol echad ve'echad kesef gul galto, but if the king framed it as a head tax that each person is obligated, so then the Amearet don't pay for the Talmidei Chachamim. Ela im ratza melech limchol lahem yimchol. The king wants to, so then he can waive it. V'lo od ela demalka lo torach ela amar kach lagach anashem yeshkan mekach lagach chayav kol echad ve'echad. And the king, right, didn't put in the effort. He just said such and such people are here, and each one is obligated. Vim tafas miyachid mehem. O merabim al yidei kulam kidinei. Boin amearet zegovin mitamidei chachamim. Right, if he says one person should collect on behalf of everybody, but he's right to collect, so then again you collect from tamidei chachamim. And he quotes Rabbeinu Chananel to this effect. Rabbeinu Chananel zal katav, kol eile kigon sheyesh aleihem devar katzuv b'maza gulgolot o b'taksid de'arob arnono marichin kol echad u'mekabsin oto b'meneihem ein al d'mincham l'sayam l'tet lehem b'elu klub. Okay, so the Ramban says that the only type of tax you're exempt from is a communal tax that is then some divided amongst the individuals, but not an individual tax. Okay? Who disagrees with that? A lot of people do, but we've already seen one of them. The Rambam. I just sort of skipped over it because the Rambam goes out of his way to say he doesn't agree with that assessment. All right, the Rambam says whether it's a head tax or a communal tax. Many Rishonim believe this. Yeah, Rama argues. Many Rishonim argue. Yeah. Oh, that was the question I was going to ask you, right? So explain this to me, right? What is the nature of this machlokas as to whether these exemptions apply only when it's on the community, and then it's subdivided, or if it even applies for an individual? Yeah. So, what do you think? What do you explain that? How do you explain the machloket? Right? Why would you say there's a difference? Now, many of you shown him, right, disagree with the Ramban. So, yeah, Rama argues, you look at the Rush. Second, the Rush argues. Okay, so let's flesh it out, right? So what Yehonah is saying, which maybe what the Ramban is saying, is look, but let's flesh it out. According to the Ramban, he says that if it's on the community, so then, right, what did the Ramban say? Then you can plausibly construe it that this tax was imposed on the community, and quoting Rebbe from later in the sugya, all bad things happen because of Amay Me'aretz. It's not our fault, right? We didn't really need it, and therefore, so you make a jump, which I don't know if you have to make, but I think you're 90% right and 10% maybe right, right? Which is, if you focused on the need, Svara, let's analyze the Yonatan first. Right, if you focus on the need, Svara, right, that you're paying for service, so what's the Ramban's argument? That if it's put on the community, so the rabbis can plausibly say, look, it's not really me. It's not really my fault. I don't really need this. Elomai, I live in we live in Vilna, right? We live in Vilna. And what can you do? There are a lot of people live in Vilna. Not everyone's a Talmud Chacham. But that is only plausible if the way the king puts the tax is on the community. Because then the Talmud Chacham would say, it wasn't me. It wasn't my fault. But if it's put on each person individually, then Yonatan says, no. Right? Then, so you're saying you have to take it as an indication that they're not around the real Talmud Chacham. I don't know if you have to go that far. Right? But you could just say that the argument that I'm not really partaking of this is no longer true because it was specifically put on my head. Is it because that proves he's not really a Talmud Chacham, or it proves that when we say Talmud Chacham don't mean need security, it means they normally don't. But in a case when it's framed as such, clearly God wants it, or whatever it is, the point is that you can't argue that you don't need it, that you're not paying the service, because you can only make that argument when it was a communal obligation. You can claim that you were just, that you're not really part of it, just looks like you are. Right? But if it's about kavod, right, or if it's about service, so then what would you say? Then it gets a little bit harder, right? Right. Meaning, if it's about kavod, you could argue that no, right? Just like, I mean, think about where the Rambam says you're exempt from both types of taxes. He says it in the Talmud Torah, where he also says that if you are a merchant and you're a Talmud Chacham, we have to let you do it first. Clearly, what we're saying is that other people actually have an obligation to help you financially. Right? And this is where I think we have to push up. Wait, right? One second. Where we have to, what? Not pay for you, right? But, what? Well, what? Correct. But what are you, what's the Rambam getting at? That the reason you're exempt from taxes is because you're not supposed to be paid for Torah, but the honor due to the Talmud Chacham actually obligates the community in certain ways to benefit you financially. Not to pay you, but to allow you to work first, have the first dibs in the marketplace, which is clearly a financial gain, right? People will pay, right? People will bid for that, right? So the community has to give that to you. Because kavod says that it's not just that you don't need it, it's that we actually have to. Now, therefore, if you think it's kavod, you could argue, as the Rambam does, that it doesn't matter how this tax is formulated. Right? In the end of the day, the community has to take care of this for you, and that's not the same as paying you. Right? It's mavriach ari, right, is the phrase in the Gemara. It's chasing away a lion from you. And if you think it's about the trade formulation also, you could say, look, right, it's not that I don't need it. It's that I've already contributed to society. I've done my share. In that model as well, you could argue that even if it's a individual tax, in the end of the day, the community has to pay for you, because it's not that you're really exempt, it's that you have already contributed. right? The only model where it's clear cut that you should be exempt, sorry, that you should be liable, is if you think it's about the service model. Because then you'll say, look, if I don't need it, which I can argue when it's framed as a communal obligation, then I don't have to pay. When it's placed on my head, whether that shows I'm not really a Talmid Chacham or shows that this is the type of time when I do need security, if it's on my head, it's on my head. You can't tell me I don't need it. Clearly I do. The king picked me out of the crowd and said, I'm obligated. Okay, Ezra's hand is falling off. Go. We're not talking about a Jewish king. We're talking about the community owes this to an outsider. I mean, I don't know. We haven't really introduced mitzvot. I mean, maybe kavodat Torah is a mitzvah in that sense. But I mean, I think you're meaning, if I put it a little bit differently, I think you're right that the formulation of kavod sounds more like there's an obligation for us as a community to ensure actively that the Talmud Chacham is taken care of by avoiding taxation for him, right? As opposed to the other formulation, which is just like, right, unless it's actively opposed on the Talmud Chacham, we can't impose it, right? I don't know if that's ase lo tase. They don't really mitzvot here. Maybe the Kavod HaTorah is, right? But, right, not charging him tax doesn't seem to be about a prohibition. It's just saying, it's definitely a negative, right? He doesn't partake.
I mean, it's just like you're over you're over a bunch of
life. Right, meaning, okay, fine. Fine. If you want to formulate it that way, I guess you could.
You have a positive responsibility.
But I think you're right, right? That another way of formulating this is that the kavod generates a positive obligation to take care of the Talmid Chacham by helping him avoid taxes, which would clearly push us, right, expand the circle here of the things that might be included, whereas the negative formulation, which is if he doesn't need it, so then he doesn't have to pay for it, well, when that argument falls away because it's on his head, it's by person, so then the obligation, right? Clearly you do need it. Why, whether that proves you're not a real Talmid Chacham or not, I don't know. I don't think you have to go quite that far. But it's clear that you do need it because that's how the king formulated it. Yes, Jonathan.
How does the Rambam changing the economical norm for people who are income? Not what we meant to say, like, it's the same from.
Right, so this is the very, very, right, this is, the Rambam is very much, he's threading the needle there, right, where he's saying that taking money for Talmud Torah is benefiting from Talmud Torah. But allowing the Talmud Chacham the first dibs at business is simply respect, right? He's, even though it has financial implications to it, what? Correct. And that he thinks you can do, because that he thinks is a function of honor, right? He thinks that allowing the, you know, look. One second. Look. I think for the Rambam, look. Obviously, the Rambam thinks you need to show honor to Amid Chachamim. So if you had a Talmud Chacham and he was waiting in line for lunch, right? You might let him go ahead of you. You probably should. Right, if Rabbi Chait was eating lunch here, you know, I think we'd all just let him take food first, right, and then, you know, and then the rest of us would take. So the Rambam says, well, look, the same what? Okay.
I don't think that, fine.
But my point is that the fact that you also would let him, you know. if you had 10 Esrog sellers and he decided to go into the Esrog selling business, the fact that you would let him, right, sell first because you don't want him to have to hang around and you don't want to have to waste him time and, you know, and if possibly like to benefit, right, that's a different type of thing because, look, you're not giving him money. He's selling you an Esrog. But you're letting him sell it first. You're letting him at first dibs. Now, it obviously, that gives him a financial advantage. But he's not being paid for Talmud Torah. You're showing him respect, which has financial implications. And the Rambam thinks that's okay, but paying him directly for Torah is not. Because in the end of the day, I let Talmid Chacham go first in general. Not always does that have a financial implication. It might, right? But it's not like once letting a Talmid Chacham go first has financial implications, now it's puzzle. So again, I don't know if the Rambam would be a right. The Rambam is saying you can't take a salary for it, but would the Rambam say that? Right, I don't know if the Rambam would say like, look, like, let's say every person. You know, let's leave the house aside, right? Let's take a very simple case where I think it'd be hard to say it's a problem, right? I don't want extremes. We'll start to have to say, are you faking something? But let's say, you know, the average person invests in his continuing education, I don't know, $1,000 a year, right? Whether that means continuing credit seminars that doctors need and lawyers need and business professionals need, right? Or that means, you know, doctors buying a subscription to the New England Journal of Medicine to make sure they're up on the newest research or whatever it is, right? Let's say the average person comes out to $1,000 a year, okay? For Talmud Chacham, let's say that means that he invests $1,000 a year in new Svarim, right? In updating his Bar Ilan so he can make his source sheets and buying himself the newest Svarim so that he's aware of, you know, what's going on and whatever, right? Would you say that it's benefiting from Talmud Torah if, you know, the yeshiva says, you know, gives the Rosh Yeshiva a stipend every year to buy new Svarim, right? Or buy his Svarim for him, let's say, right? It's, you know, we're learning Bava Basra, so we picked up the newest, you know, deluxe Oz V'Hadar and Misivta, right? You are, but, correct, but like, that's also true if someone sends him, you know, or, fine, an even better case, okay? The 5 new Svarim are published in Bava Basra this year. And the authors hear that Rabbi Ginsburg is teaching Bava Basra this year, so they send him free copies, right, because they want him to use it, because they want a haskama, right? And they're like, oh, you're learning Bava Basra anyways. Here, I'll send you a free copy of the book. And, you know, do you mind writing a haskama? Do you mind, right? Yeah, but correct. But my point is that there are things where there's going to be a financial benefit where clearly what's really happening is that someone is showing honor to the Talmud Chacham, right? And I think in the end of the day, what the Rambam is going to tell you is that things that are fundamentally about honor for Talmidei Chachamim, that's mutter. The fact that it has financial implications is fine. What's not okay is to be paid for Torah. That's what the Rambam thinks is usher. Yes, I agree. But like, or let me give you another case, okay? Let me give you one more case. One second, Ezra. Let me give you one more case, okay? Average person, when he flies in to, right, he takes a flight. So most people, definitely, if it's a long flight, they end up taking a cab to and from the airport because, you know, it's not worth paying for long-term parking. It's worth paying the $75 or whatever it is to the airport, so they don't have to worry about it, right? If, you know, when ever any Rosh Hashiva flies in, right, they will either ask a senior Talmud or something, would you like to pick up, you know, whoever, Rav Schechter, from the airport? And people will jump at the opportunity. Now, are they saving Rav Schechter the $75 cab ride? 100%. But clearly, right, that the fact that the Talmud Chacham is being driven by one of his students, that's not real. What's really going on is not that they're giving him the $75 bonus, right? What's going on is that the Talmidim want to show him respect by escorting him, and they get the opportunity to spend time with him. And sure, there are financial implications to that. And I think that's exactly the point, right? But no, I think that's exactly the point, is that in this case, there is a clear financial benefit, the $75 for the cab ride. But this is an act of kavod. And what the Rambam is going to say, is that things that are fundamentally an act of kavod, because, take the businessman. You could say that the reason you're letting the Talmud Chacham businessman go first is to give him financial benefit. But it could equally be because you know that the Talmud Chacham is going to, you know, he's selling 10 esrogim. And you know that until he sells his 10, he's not going to go back to yeshiva and learn because he has to wait until he sells all of his merchandise. And you want the Talmud Chacham to be able to go back and learn Torah. So you let him do business. Now, which is motivating you here? Probably a little bit of both, right? But you can definitely conceptualize this as honor, respect for his time. So in that case, even though there are financial implications, the Rambam will say it's okay, because it's not, you're not paying him for Talmud Torah, right? Now the Chiddush here is that the Rambam thinks the same thing is true of taking care of his taxes, right? Which is interesting, right? Correct. And in general, in halacha, we have this notion, there's a difference between mavriach ari and paying, where we don't think that paying off someone's debts even is the same as paying him. It's called mavriach ari. Is you had a lion chasing you and we got rid of the lion. Right? In halacha, we do distinguish, even though in the end of the day, the how much you have in your pocket is the same, conceptually those are distinct. I don't know. Ezra, go. What was your question? I don't know. I know this back and forth with the Yonatan went long, but that's okay, right? It is a fine line and a thin line.
I couldn't remember the term. I was like, thin line? Yeah, thin line sounds right. But
it's a fine line, sure. Like an Eruv. A thin
line.
Right? Okay. But that, I think, is one good nafkamina, right? Where you see that if you conceptualize this about the need, so as soon as you reframe the tax in a way that seems to make it impossible to deny that this is directed at Talmud Chacham, so then he's chayev. That's Ramban's argument. But if you think that, no, it's not just about need, but it's about other things, so then you can expect a position like the Rambam, the Yad Ramah, yeah. Which is, by the way, how we paskin, or the Ashraf Harach paskin, yes. Yes, that might be problematic. Right, you can also distinguish between him pursuing it, which obviously demanding a salary is more direct in that sense, than I didn't ask for this, the king put a tax here, right, and the community is just taking care of the tax. Yeah, there might be another way of distinguishing. Possibly, yes. Right? Possibly. Okay. Where'd Yanzan go? Okay. So that's one nafkamina. Are we clear? Right? Are we clear on this nafkamina? Yes. Okay. I'm not going to go to the Chacham Sofer until Yanzan makes it back. So a second nafkamina. Fine. So another nafkamina that we talked about already yesterday was the question of whether you could expand this exemption to other types of taxes. Right? Where we noted that if you really think this is a need, right, a pay-for-services conceptualization, so the only thing we have in the Gemara that they dafka don't need is shmirah, nitiruta. But any other tax, so then they're chayev. But what did we already see in the Rambam? That the Rambam expanded it to some other, not all, but to some other types of taxes that are imposed by the king. Right? So we already mentioned yesterday that this is another nafkamina, right? Which is clear in the Rambam, is that if you think this is only about a need-based service payment model, so then it only applies to the thing that the Gemara outlined that Talmid Chacham don't need, and anything that they do need, so then they're chayav. But if it's a tax which is not directly security needed, related, and therefore we don't have this argument of Talmid Chacham lo tzrich nitiruta to exempt you, so then you're going to be chayav. But somebody said, I don't know who it was, but it might also have been Yonatan, that there really is a third way of taking this, which is saying that maybe the reason that you could argue that Talmid Chacham is exempt, not just, I think it was Andrew, right? Right? That technically there's a third direction that's between those two, which is to say, maybe Talmid Chachamim are in fact exempt from some other taxes, some other tributes to the king, but not because we full-throated accept the kavod model or they already contribute model. Oh, that was one of your models. You had a different model, right? I think within security. Someone had a security model, which was that maybe other taxes that are tributes to the king. Oh, is Ezra? Okay, then Ezra. So, but Ezra said, no, there's really a third model here, which is maybe really this is just about service. But you're being reductionist when you think that the only type of tax that is actually about security are ones that are called security tax. In a non-Jewish society, not like the modern democracy, but in a feudal society where you live securely at the good grace of the king or the baron, the feudal lord, whatever, so it could be that you would argue that Talmid Chacham is exempt from tribute, other tributes, because you expand the notion of security. Security is anything that practically functions to increase our security here, and that might not just be the things that we technically pay for the walls, but it might include tribute that we pay to the baron, the feudal lord, so that they protect us. Right? That's what you said?
Yeah.
Good. So who says that? Who says that explicitly? Right? Because the Ramban is at one extreme. The Ramban says it's only security tax. The Rambam, at first glance, sounds like it's the other extreme, that it's more expansive than that because of kavod. But who says, no, it really is about security because it's about need, but it's still more expansive? Who says that? I should have asked you if you'd seen it yet, but okay. The Rush. Okay, you hadn't seen it yet? Fine. Well, then I guess I'll read it to you because I've already given it away. I've given away the ending, so. So I'll just read you the line in the Rush. The Rush, this is in Aleph Chavtet, says as follows. The cost of our revenue, Yosef, he quotes the Rimigash, Kimil to Disle Nitiruta Liadme Gon Mini Paronos, Avarnes Loramina Nayatme. He says, V'yirat li, it seems to me, d'chol mine misim midei d'netiruta nidu. All these taxes are security. Ki heim ha-shomrim otanu beim ha-ovdei kol chavim u-mazalot, because that's what keeps us safe. The fact that we pay tribute after tribute after tribute is what keeps us safe amongst the non-Jews. Ki ma to'elet yesh l'ktsat ovdei kol chavim u-mazalot banu l'shomrein lo shiv otanu beinehem. What other benefit do these non-Jews have to let us live among them? Ella b'shvil hana'ah shnei otin ve'et Yisrael l'gvot mehen misim v'arnonot. The benefit, the reason they let us live here at all is because we pay taxes. And therefore, he writes that maybe we should stick with the security model, but an expanded security model. So what Yonatan missed was simply this one point, was that the second nafkamina that we already began discussing yesterday as to whether this is only about service, and therefore it's only security, or whether it's about honor or the contribution to society, is, do you think that it extends beyond security tax? If you think it's about paying for service, no. If you think it's about kavod, so then yes, it's going to be more expensive. But Ezra had suggested that, no, maybe there's actually a middle model, which is, really, we conceptualize the exemption of taxes based on the Talmidei Chachamim only pay for what they need, and they don't need security. And nevertheless, we should expand that to certain other tributes. Why? Because the reality was that what kept you safe from your non-Jewish neighbors wasn't just the money you put into the wall, was the tributes that you paid that made the non-Jew, the feudal lord, put up with the Jews living amongst him, which is a middle position, right? And that is indeed the position of the Rush. That the Rush says, yeah, the reason that we extend these exemptions beyond just wall tax is because tribute and things like that are also, in the end of the day, functional security taxes. Because as he said, what other reason could these feudal lords have for letting us live here? Now, for modern Jews, besides for Ezra, not all of us jumped to that conclusion. But for medieval Jews, that was the most logical, practical conclusion to jump to, simply because if you know anything about Jewish history in pretty much anywhere in the world, you know that the Jews were often brought in for that reason, right? To pay taxes, because they were good businessmen and would pay taxes. And often, Jews were, right? A lot of the pogroms happened, why? So sometimes because they were moneylenders, and sometimes because the Jews were financially better off because the local baron only allowed the Jews to come because they were wealthy and would pay taxes, and therefore they lived there as under the protection of the baron, which made locals angry, and eventually sometimes the barons just said, it's not worth dealing with this resentment because resentment is building up against me. Instead of letting them have a full-out coup against me, I have a better idea, which is, let me direct the resentment at the people until now I've protecting, and let them take it out against the Jews. Okay. Third nafkamina to this question, right, that touches on this question, is the question that Yonatan dealt with, which is, what if, are there different types of walls? Right, even within the wall discussion, are there different types of walls? So, this is the question that the Chassam Sofer deals with. So the first thing the Chassam Sofer does is, as a side point, deals with Adam's question that Adam asked a few days ago, which was, wait a second, why are we paskening halacha based on the policy decisions of Artaxasta, or which is itself a fulfillment of the decrees of Cyrus, right, to exempt the rabbis? So that the Chassam Sofer simply answers by saying, because Ezra was the rabbinic advisor to Artaxasta, and therefore we assume that any policy he instituted had the haskama of Ezra, and Ezra is a darn good posek. Fine, okay? Close parentheses on that. We do.
I told you, Chazal literally think that Ezra was as great as Moshe Rabbeinu, right? They say it in those words, that had the Torah not been given by Moshe, then it would have been given by Ezra, and that is why he was mechadesh a new ktav in the Torah, to show that he essentially was giving us a new Torah, right? He is the father of Torah Shebaal Peh. He just is, right? So I wouldn't say we worship him, but... Right. We don't worship him, but if there was someone you would worship, it would be Ezra, essentially. That's how much we like Ezra. What? No, we don't actually worship him. We don't actually worship the moon either. I got it. Fine. So the...
Other question.
Yeah.
Did you just, like, throw out the idea of the time thing? Or is that, like, one year's time, I mean, someone's
able to do time. We didn't throw it out. We didn't throw it out, right? If you take that model, I said, in that type of model, right, you also could say that it's more expansive.
Yeah
potentially. In economy. Okay, so that's the first claim the Chassam Sofer. Then the Chassam Sofer is the second claim. And again, I didn't want to get into all the complexity here, which is, are Tamidi Chamim Chayev in Machzer HaShekel, and is Machzer HaShekel used for the walls of Yerushalayim, which is a very complicated discussion in the Tosefta, but there's a what? I mean, it's a very, very complicated discussion in the Tosefta and you know, the Mordechai, and I basically wanted to, you know, minimize the sources, so I kept you away from all of that. So that's really the background to this whole discussion, but what is... But the Chassam Sofer, after going through that, what does he argue? He says, in the end of the day, based on certain assumptions he makes about the Machzer HaShekel and the Trumas HaLishka and its relationship to the walls of Yerushalayim, fine, right? He makes the claim that Talmidei Chachamim are obligated in paying towards the walls of Yerushalayim. Right? That is the upshot of his claim. And he says why, right? Yeah. What does he say? He says, because there are two types of security. There is security from our non-Jewish neighbors when we are in Galut. And then there are walls that we put up to secure one nation from another. And he claims that the walls of Yerushalayim are the latter. And the walls that the Gemara is talking about are the former. And Talmidei Chachamim are obligated in that type of security tax. Now, pray tell, why does he say that? What? They pay for the ones that are between nations, right? You read it? You read the Chassam Sofer. He said, the walls that are being malchut the malchut, they do pay for. And that's the type of wall Yerushalayim is. Why would you say such a thing?
I would assume that the Chassam Sofer holds that it is legal for a lawless power to draft.
What does that do with draft?
Oh, because it's all about war. Come on, assume that.
We're talking about a wall.
I know, but it's not a defense wall. It's an offense.
No, not at all. Come on. It's defensive. Okay, Adam. What? Yeah, so. Yeah, what about it? No, he's saying like between kingdoms. Not necessarily that, meaning the walls that a sovereign Jewish state puts up. That's his point. They are obligated in to protect them from war. Right, and that's different than Jews living in Galut. Why? Ezra, Yonadab.
While even everyone benefits from the existence of the sovereign Jewish state, so but and the protection afforded specifically to Providence or Providence are necessarily afforded from God, aren't necessarily afforded to the state at large. So it's like they had a stake in something.
Okay, good. So Ezra gives one possibility, which is that if it's about service, so a wall when you are a minority in Galut is really just a wall. It's just security. But the wall around a sovereign state that protects you from the enemies is more than that. It is symbolic of the state and all the benefits that accrue because of statehood. And even if the Talmud Chacham doesn't need the security aspect, all the other things that come along with it, that a Talmud Chacham benefits from, and he is, therefore, going to have to pay. Yes, Ezra, you want to add to that? Oh, an or. Okay, that's one possibility, right? One possibility is that this is limiting even within the service conceptualization and saying not all things that look like security, right? This is the opposite of the Rush. The Rush says that some things that don't look like security are in fact security. And the Chassam Sofer is telling you that not all things that look like they're just about security are in fact just about security, right? Good. That's one possibility. What else? Very good. So the other possibility is what Yehonatan and I had said before, and this is what I read the Chassam Sofer is more saying, right, is no. Right? If I had to guess what the Chassam Sofer is getting at, is that it's not just about security. Right? We've talked about it. The exemption of Talmud Chacham is also about kavod. It's one thing to say that as a minority amongst the nations, right, the fact that we need a wall to protect ourselves in the ghetto, like that is just not honorable. So that, Talmid Chacham are above that. But in a sovereign state, the wall that you have, that's not showing weakness, right, in the same way. There's not the ghetto wall, right? In the end of the day, and you think about it, right, what's the difference between, right, or to put it differently, right, if crime increases in your little, whatever, right, and the police are just not responsive enough, so people get together and they say, we've got to set up a night watch, right? That's evidence of weakness. Right? Meaning we live in a state. Really, it should be the police doing it, but they're not doing their job. They're not taking care of us enough. Right? So, we're, stuck. We need to set up a watch. Right? And when you see, the person going around, you don't feel like, oh, right, this is honorable. But that's not the same with the IDF. Right? People take pride in having the idea, the IDF, right? When you see Riv Goren, right, blowing the shofar in his madim, right, in his uniform on the famous picture of 1967 and blowing the shofar in full uniform at the Kotel, you don't look and say, oh, miskin, he had to stand up for himself, right? You say the security measures of a state, the fact that we have an army and can defend ourselves is actually honorable. Right? So if it's about honor, I would say that, look, there's a difference between security that you pay for that is evidence of weakness and the security you engage in as an expression of independence. Right? And therefore, if it's about kavod, I would say that that makes a lot of sense, that the wall that you're paying for in the ghetto, that the Talmud Chacham should be above that. But the walls of Yerushalayim, right? I mean, just think, if you're just talking about the walls of Yerushalayim, what Talmud Chacham would not want to say, I helped build those? Actually, no. Right? How do I know that? Because their name literally means Shomrei Ha'ir. That's literally their name. Neturei Karta, Neturei is Shomrim, Karta is ear in Aramaic. Neturei Karta literally means Shomrei Ha'ir. It is a badge of pride for them. By the way, that's actually what they're getting at. You understand that? See, okay, parenthetically, that's actually their... Oh, right. I forgot to tell you. You understand that this Gemara is actually one of the basis for that, for the choice of that name. Yes, it's because the state thinks they're the people who are protecting us, but it's not true. Talmidei Chachamim, Torah is what protects us. They think the army are the Shomrim Ha'ir. We're the real Shomrim Ha'ir. We're the Neturei Karta. Right, that's actually where the name comes from. Is it a theological claim that the state is not really what's protecting us, but it's Torah? So I'm glad you brought it up, because that's actually, our Gemara is, their understanding of our Gemara and other related Gemaras is actually the theological basis for the name they chose for themselves, which is that we are the Shomrim of Yerushalayim, the real Shomrim of Yerushalayim. But now you know why they call themselves Neturei Karta, because Neturei Karta means Shomrei Ha'ir, that they think they're the real protectors of the city, and they got it from our Gemara. Yes, Jonathan.
Well, he did that if it comes over a bit more expensive than that. It's not just that it's like it comes over fully multi-year time, rather, if there is a sovereign state of Israel, sovereign king of Israel, that the cover of the sovereign king of Israel is to be, especially some people are raising the laws of Tom.
Yeah, you could say that, right? I mean, he doesn't invoke Melech, and that's why I'm not going, right, per se. Right, he's saying that, but maybe, right, you could say that, yeah, and the Talmud Chacham is higher than the totem pole. To show honor to the king is not beneath him, a Jewish king, right? Yeah, you could go in that direction also. Potentially, yeah. Yeah, yeah, very good, right? I think you're definitely right, that the, right, this is part of the same, yes, right, part of the same type of value scheme that we saw in the context of taking money from non-Jews, where the assumption was the Chilul Hashem, because it reveals the fact that you can't support yourself, you need the largesse of your non-Jewish benefactor, and we mentioned that there was that one shita that therefore was machadesh, that if the non-Jews aren't contributing in Galut, but they're contributing to the sovereign state, that you actually could take it because it's a sign of honor. The fact that they, right, because there's a difference between a handout and a contribution, right, essentially, right? Yes, exactly, that too, obviously. But yes, right, that Svara who said that the Christian Zionist contributions to the state is actually a statement of honor, right, because they want to come and support us, right, rather than ezem miskenim, right, these poor Jews who live among us, we need to give them some handouts, right, follows the same type of model that I'm suggesting within the Chacham Sofer, which was originally Yonatan's model, so we finally saw it inside. But yes, what? Okay. Yes.
And also, would you say that would you say the possibility of influencing through the cover model is that it's not that what you're with all these taxes, what you're doing your tax economy to come in for whatever purposes, it's not that you're like violating their cover, but if they contribute to the tax, they are basically declared, it's not that they are paying for something they don't need, it's that they are then saying it is something they need.
Yes, I think that's definitely true, right? I think that part of the cheshbon might be, right, that it's not just about them, right? It's a statement of values, correct, right? That by saying that the rabbis do need to contribute, it might even be problematic in that model, because you're saying they need it, and the Torah isn't enough to protect them, correct? Okay? So far we've seen three potential nafkaminas to test these, right? One was, is it more expansive to other taxes, which we said, if it's only about security, no. If it's about some honor or contribution to society, maybe yes, unless you take a middle model like the Rush, right, which is that in Galut, certain taxes and tributes are essentially paying for your security, even though that's not what they're called. The second nafkamina we saw was the nafkamina we just saw, the Chacham Sofer's model, which is, what happens if the type of security you're talking about is broader? It actually is a sign of honor and dignity, right? That's how I would take it. So then it might flip, right? That if it's about honor, so then when it's the honorable thing, it's your independent army, right? It's your wall between a country, right? It's your dignity, right? Rather than, you know, the ghetto wall, so then maybe you do obligate the Talmud Chacham, right? Though we noted that maybe the Chacham Sofer is really just, you know, getting in on needs, right? And as Ezra said, in possibility one of Ezra, right, which is that there's a difference between, you know, the minimal needs of what a ghetto wall provides and what a national wall provides, which it provides other things. And the third was the Ramban's question, which is the Machloket Rishon and Ramban versus the Rambam, Ramban versus the Rama, which is what happens if it's framed as a security tax but a head tax. So if it's about honor, you might say, no, other people actually have to cover your tax. If it's about contributions to society, so then they might actually have to cover your taxes. But with the aside that we talked about, the Ahonatan, which how then do you distinguish that from taking money for Talmud Torah directly? But if you think it's about need, so it's one thing to say, I don't need it when it's framed as an obligation on the community, so maybe I don't technically need it and you can't prove that I need it because it wasn't framed directly as an obligation on me. But if it's framed as an obligation on me, right, so then the Talmud Chacham can't say, I don't need it. What do you mean you do need it? It was framed as an obligation on you. And that shows something, that indicates something about who this is aimed at. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So what nafke mina do I have left for you? That so you guys haven't read the rush, is what you're telling me. You haven't done the rush yet. Okay, so let's say this. Tomorrow, look back. I read you already Chavtet, which was the expanded security model, the rush. So let's not go back to that. But the second half of Halacha Chav Vav in the rush sets up the begins the discussion of which type of Talmud Chacham are we talking about. Okay? So I want you to see that because that was a question we opened with, which is, what are we really talking about? What type of Talmud Chacham is it really about? Tzaddik, right? Which is another nafka mina here, right? So I want you to see his discussion, though there really is a lot more to see, but I want you at least to see his discussion. I'm not going to force you to read all the people inside, but at least get the ball rolling and what type of Talmud Chacham you think matters here. On that note, I would say, I didn't give you this yet, but I would say, look at the Marsha. The Marsha is going to be the one who is going to say something very similar to, I think it was Andrew who said it, about the taking the time away, picking up on one line that we skipped over in the Agadata, which was so this is actually an Agadic statement of the Marsha, but he notes that the Gemara on Chet Amud Aleph had noted that when describing Talmidei Chachamim, it describes them as Hemtukula Raglecha, something having to do with feet, right? And the Gemara had said, why, what does that mean? So Rabbi Yosef had said, Elu Talmidei Chachamim Shemechatetim Raglehem Me'ir Le'ir Medina Medina L'Lmo Torah. These are Talmidei Chachamim who wear down their feet by walking from city to teach Torah, right? If we focus on that model, there are different ways you could take this that might hit on maybe we've been conceptualizing this exemption wrong. So I want you to see the Marsha. You know where to get the Marsha, right? Marsha and Rosh are both in the back of the Gemara. And we didn't get a chance today to talk about the Radbaz. What? Do you finish the Radbaz? Okay, fine. So finish the Radbaz, and that's the unique case where the Talmidei Chachamim are rich and therefore they're the only people who need security, and the poor people don't need security because they have nothing to, their money, right, there's nothing to secure. So what do you do in a case like that, which is another way of pushing this? What else did I send? I sent you the Ramban. I gave you the Rosh, and now I'm telling you just focus on Chaf Vav, because I already said Chaf Tet. The Radbaz, what else did I give you? What? And I gave you the Chassam Sofer. Fine. And I would just add, okay, and look at Tosvot, the first Tosvot in Chet Amud Aleph, it's only two lines, right? And I think with that, we can finish up this part in one day, okay? What I haven't shown you yet, but I don't think we'll do it inside, but we do have to talk about it, this Gemara became a machloket, in terms of whether we can derive from this Gemara that the current exemption that is so heated in Israel, that Kolel guys are putter from going to the army, right? This was one of the major Gemaras that was brought into play. Do you want me to give you things inside, or should we just say that I'll relegate 15 minutes or so at the end, hopefully, to summarize the modern discussion about that? Or, okay, I'll bring a brief discussion of it, and if you want to read it, I'll give it to you tomorrow, but focus on these primary sources. Then, the one more thing I want to do in this sugya, I think before we move on to the next issues, is the issue from the story of Rebbe and Yonatan ben Amram, which was, we mentioned it briefly, but the question of when Rebbe didn't want to give money to the Ame Aretz, what exactly was he doing that? Was that he wanted to give Talmidei Chachamim first, or that he, right, didn't want to fund Ame Aretz? And if that's the case, why would that be the case? Ooh, Adam, be careful. So to that end, you could look at the Ritva, right, which is Nifsak Lachan Shulchan Aruch. You look at the Marsha and the Kovet Shirim. And that would bring us basically to what I want to do until the end of the page. And that's within sort of holding myself back. That's what I want to cover by the end, until the end of the page. And then, we'll continue, right? Then, there's stuff on the Amud. Do you have an interest in going deep specifically into the unique nature of Pidyon Shvuyim, or no? I wasn't planning on it, but I can do it if you want. Otherwise, I want to move to the guild sugyot and how they, and then talk about unions and strikes and stuff like that. Okay, you guys think about it. Okay, but that's the plan for the next two days. Okay.